Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex podcaster, and because of those titles, people often say to me, "You must be so brave, you must be so confident," and I just laugh because I don't think I am those things. Who are you, friend?
I'm Billy Laura, and I'm a sex educator and a porn maker, and people tell me I'm so brave for other reasons. That was a trans joke. Anyway.
I get that for illness too. People are like, "You're so brave, you're so strong," and I sort of feel like I don't really have a choice. Like, I appreciate the compliment, but also
This is just a fact
stubborn.
Of my life.
Yeah,
yeah. It was this or die, so I stuck with this. You know, right. I don't know
exactly.
Go me. Anyway, this is a more optimistic episode than that. Before that little diversion, what I was wanted to talk about today, or I thought would be interesting to talk about, was just self-confidence in general, because I think it is a thing that is thrown around a lot as just like, be and have and no, feel good about yourself, and that is what being confident is, right? And just, you are allowed to be like that and feel good, and now you're confident, right? But like, thought it would be interesting to, in our dildorky kind of way, pick apart what actually is self-confidence, what makes it up, how you kind of cultivate it, and why it is hot. Because it is, like, I think it's pretty inarguably a hot trait to be somewhat self-confident. So anyway, I guess now that I've talked about how complicated of an idea it is, do you think you could define self-confidence for us off the top?
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people who I would describe as confident who probably would not describe themselves as such. And I really think a huge element of confidence is just faking it till you make it. Like, yeah. I agree with you that there does seem to be a perception that in order to be confident, you have to feel good about yourself. And I guess by one definition of confidence, maybe, but like to project confidence in a way that makes other people relate to you differently, I think doesn't really require that. And like, I'm noticing this in my own life a lot over the past year in musical improv, because when I'm in those spaces, I'm very confident because people have seen me do musical improv. So I'm like, okay, this one skill that we all value, they know that I am good at. So I feel confident in that space. But if we start to drift outside of that space conversationally, I might notice myself starting to feel a little less confident about like other areas of my life. But it's so fascinating how like people respond to me so differently in that space from any other space in my life. Like people like will be more flirty with me and will like come right up to me to compliment me and stuff. And I'm like, this does not happen in my everyday life. Like I feel like I repel social attention in so many areas of life because I just have no charisma in other areas of life. I have no confidence in so many other areas. It's like improv. And like if I go to a sex conference, maybe where people are going to know me, then like contextually I have confidence. But for the most part, I don't feel that way, like from the inside out, inherently all the time. And so yeah, when I'm trying to feel more self-confident, I might sort of put myself mentally in spaces where I do feel that way and try to bring that through into other areas, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're already touching on something that I've kind of learned about self-confidence over, you know, my adulthood, I guess, is that, again, like it, as a concept, I always think of it as this broad, like, trait that you have it or you don't. You are a self-confident human or not, like, or, you know. And in my experience, it is much more contextual. And I mean that not just in, like, there are certain spaces where I am self-confident, but it's like, no, my self-confidence is in the parts of myself that I have chosen to put skill points into, the parts of myself that I do. It is not a baseline, yes, I am self-confident, and therein all parts of myself are great and worthy, and I am a good human being, and hot and talented and smart and funny. No, I'm some of those things sometimes, in some circumstances, on some topics. But I take pride in those corners of my life, and that brings me confidence in other areas where I'm like, oh no, I'm actually like, self-confidence comes for me not just from knowing the things I'm good at, but also allowing that to create space for the things that I am bad at, where it's like, no, I can confidently be bad at this thing because this isn't my thing. This isn't the thing that I want to be good at. This isn't the thing that I take pride in being good at. I'm playing softball right now for the third time in my life ever. I'm gonna suck at it. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that the things that I care about, I do well and am good at, and that is the thing that brings me pride in other ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that has helped me when I've been trying a new thing that I'm bad at, that I'm like judging myself for and feeling like such a loser for being bad at, is the reframe of like, no, it's actually brave and confident and awesome of me to have tried a new thing. Like, there are so many people who just don't, or who will go years without doing it. And I try to not go that long without trying new things if I can help it, even if they're really hard for me because I hate being bad at stuff.
Yeah. I want to bring us back to like the definition of self-confidence, because I think in bringing up the fake it till you make it thing, you pinpointed something interesting in the definition, right? Because there is an element of like the perception of self-confidence and the experience of having self-confidence, and those not necessarily being the same thing. Like, it can be a Venn diagram with some overlap, but they don't always have to be experienced at the same time. Yes. So can you talk maybe a little bit about, in your experience, what self-confidence looks like? And then maybe we'll get into what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the first thing that comes to mind is a certain like calm, decisive, deliberate body language. And I know that this is, of course, not achievable for everybody for a variety of reasons, but that is the first thing that comes to mind for me, as somebody who, I think of this drama teacher I had in high school who said, don't move unless it improves on stillness, which I always thought was such a good line. But it's like, there is a thing about confident people where it feels like every move that they make is very deliberately chosen. And I think as part of that, when I'm talking with someone who I feel is very like socially confident and socially capable, often I will feel very focused on by them. They are like really engrossed in that conversation and have the confidence to further that conversation, asking follow-up questions, seeming interested in what I'm talking about, but also having the confidence to like raise stuff from their own life and, you know, raise their own conversation topics. I also think one thing that comes to mind for me is like not saying a bunch of self-deprecating shit about yourself. Like, I think there's a moment for that. And like, you are actually a great example of a person who can make a self-deprecating joke in a way that reads so confident somehow. Like, because you're joking about things that like are kind of like silly or weird about you, but you're doing it in a way where it feels like you're almost saying like, that's just part of why I'm great. Like, it's just part of what makes me unique and awesome. But I think like I always get kind of uncomfortable when people are being really self-deprecating about themselves, because like my instinct is to jump in and be like, are you okay? Like, that's not true. Like, even if I don't know them super well, that kind of is my instinct. And as soon as I start feeling that towards someone, I'm not feeling their confidence, their strength. I'm feeling like I have to reassure them, which of course there's moments for that, but probably not with somebody you just met at the party, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. And there's definitely, I think, a difference between, like, I think when my humor tends towards self-deprecating, it is tending towards just self-awareness. And I also am often using it to cover, like, oh, I'd have felt anxious about that if that went unmentioned in the conversation. Right. So I'm just going to say it in a way that, like,
it's confident to mention
that
it.
Right. Like that just happened. We both saw that happen. So I'm just going to talk about that just happening and keep moving. Right.
Right. And I think in that way, confidence and self-knowledge, self-awareness do have a lot in common. I think a lot of people who read very confident to me is because they know themselves really well. They know their strengths. They know what to play up and what to play down.
Yeah. My cat's doing a whole thing over here and it's just very distracting. I don't even know. She is fighting with the inside of this cat house that she is in. I don't even know what there is to fight with in there. Okay.
Her demons.
No, you're not a guest on this, Perihelion. You are very confident. I understand. Okay. Cat just confidently strolling across the desk. honestly, cats are great examples of self-confidence.
It's true. Like, we should all be so lucky.
And I think part of that is, all right, I will bring this back around now. It has to be in the podcast. Sorry. she now is a guest on the podcast.
Hi, Perry. Welcome, Perry. Welcome to the studio.
No, cats are great examples of self-confidence because they have good boundaries, which I think is also one of the first places I notice self-confidence in other people. People who are real comfortable saying no, or people who, again, have the self-knowledge in themselves to, like, recognize where their boundaries are and are comfortable advocating for them. And also, I think it seems like, maybe I'm getting a little bit into what self-confidence feels like, but it seems like they are also operating from a place of abundance as opposed to scarcity, right? Where it doesn't feel like they are looking for that self-reassurance, or they are looking for social interaction from anyone. You'll do. What do I need to do to get that? Right. And I'm not saying that in, like, that could sound really shady in me. I've been that guy. And I like, I know what that feels like to be like, no, I need to talk to literally anyone. I haven't in a while. You're the first person I've interacted with. What do I have to do to keep you talking to me? Because I deeply would love someone to talk to me right now. Mm-hmm. And that energy is not going to project an energy of self-confidence, because it is a much more responsive energy. And there is a give and take to conversation. Certainly there are times to be responding to what you are seeing, to be asking curious questions about things, right? And there needs to be something that you are also bringing that you have a certainty in. You can be curious about the other person and have a sureness about yourself. And I'm getting way more into how it feels, I guess, than how it looks. This was my second part of the question, but this is the difference in how it feels for me to be around confident versus unconfident people, not necessarily in myself. Mm-hmm. But I, stumbling upon this thought mid-podcast, as we do, but I will say, I think one of the reasons I find it so comfortable to be around people that are more self-confident is that it is easier to be confident in myself in those spaces. And in times when I am around people who are projecting less self-confidence, it is sometimes easier for me to fall into that. And that can be me being the high masking human that I am, who is used to running off of energies around me and all of that. And who has had to work to build some degree of self-confidence. And also, I think there is some universality to that, and I think that is part of why self-confidence is so hot to see in other people, because there is an authenticity behind that, and it is easy to feel like I am having a more candid interaction with someone who feels like they are confidently presenting a version of themselves. Mm-hmm. When there is a lack of confidence, it is too easy for me to, well, are you saying that because you think that's what I want? Are you saying that because that's what you want? Is that true? Is that what you think is appropriate for the situation? Is that, and as a high-masking, anxious person, I have also been the person who is like, what do I say that's right for the situation? But this mask plus this other mask and whatever, right? And learning to be more self-confident the more I have grown has meant that the largest part of that math is, okay, what part of this is important, true, like, is important and my truth and feels true to this? And let's calculate that other stuff as is relevant.
Yeah.
All right, so we've kind of moved into what does it feel like at this point, but do you want to talk a little bit about what self-confidence feels like in your body or when you're embodying it?
I think sometimes it feels how you would expect it to feel, like a certain calm focusedness, but sometimes it's really more adrenaline flying by the seat of your pants, walking on a tightrope. Like, it's okay if you feel
says the improv artist.
Yes, exactly. Like, I have learned from improv more than from anywhere else that you can be like, your heart can be pounding and your blood can be run cold and you can still get through a scene and make sense and make people laugh. It is possible. I mean, it's easier to do if you have practice doing that, for sure. But just because you are feeling that way inside does not mean that you can't be confident or read confidently. Mm-hmm. I also think it can sometimes be helpful to reframe that in your head. Like, I really like the quote, fear is excitement with the brakes on, because I have found that to be weirdly true in my life. Like, when I sort of breathe through the what feels like fear and panic and apprehension and nervousness, and kind of reframe it in my head as like, what if this is just like really like, I'm excited. This is high stakes. This is really joyful and interesting and challenging, whatever this situation or conversation I find myself in. It does feel different, even though like the physical sensations are very similar. And that can be an empowering reframe. I also think for me, sometimes confidence feels like being very focused on things that are outside of myself. Like, I think I often feel most confident when I'm asking somebody a lot of really great in-depth questions about themselves and getting them to open up and helping them to feel like they're super fascinating. which is part of why I always advise people, like, one of the best ways to be interesting is to be interested, because people really do think you're a stellar conversationalist if you can ask them a lot of interesting, astute questions about themselves, because you are. And it also just takes a lot of the pressure off you to seem impressive, because most people, if they practice at it, I think can get good at asking interesting questions and seeming interested and actually being interested, hopefully. And you don't have to be super impressive in other ways for that to land well. Like, that makes everybody feel good for the most part.
Yeah. I think that, like, flying by the seat of your pants kind of self-confidence is the kind I don't tend to notice until after the fact and I'm looking back on a thing.
And you're like, damn, I did good.
Yeah. Like, like, oh, shit, look at that. I think for me, most often, self-confidence, sometimes it is just, like, main character energy. Like, it feels like the story in my head is just flowing and I, like, there is a degree of flow state to it, you know? But I think most often it feels like a kind of certainty, which tends to come from, like, that self-knowledge we were talking about earlier. When I think about self-confidence in my gender, it is the difference between when, in the first couple of years of figuring out my gender identity and what felt right and experimenting with things and stuff, people would misgender me and I would be like, you know, hey, fuck you, you know, gender, whatever. And, but I'd also, there's a little, I would get really emotional because there was also a little part of me who was like, no, I don't think, hang on, I'll go double check again. I'm not sure. Hang on. You know, like, because I was very much in the process of like, no, I don't know yet, actually. I'm figuring this shit out. And like, I am performing a degree of confidence and y'all should respect that because y'all should respect that. Fuck all y'all. You know this. You whatever. I don't need to get into the whole trans rights thing. But all of that is to say, at this point now, better part of a decade into figuring out my gender and things, if people call me a girl, my emotional response for the most part is, no, you're confused. Didn't you? Didn't you see? Look, you. Yeah. This is not what girls look like. I've checked. No, I'm it's fine. And I have a much less emotional response to, like, casual mistaken misgendering because I have a, like, internal certainty and the sense memory that, like, no, I know what's true about me. You can say anything or anyway, whatever. I know what's true about me. I've checked. I just know that. It's just a truth, right? And that can be true of a lot of different things about me, a lot of different traits about me, right? Like, someone could come at me and tell me that, like, I don't know anything about, like, I sometimes get people coming at me in my store telling me that I don't know anything about sex toys or lube or how to fuck or sex education in general. And I'm just like, okay, you're wrong. You're so right about anything you're going to tell me about your body, but about, like, general sex information, I'm the authority here. I just, in the vast majority of these instances, I have the confidence to be like, I've spent a decade studying this. I know this.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the most tangible feeling of self-confidence that I can conjure up is just the, like, no, I've checked. I know this one.
Yeah.
And knowing that there are corners of my life where that is true and where that I can, like, feel real confident in those spaces, and that there are other things where I'm like, oh, no, I'm still checking, or I'm learning about that or whatever, and I don't have to, because there are other things that I know, you know?
Yeah, we were talking before about kind of analogs between the trans experience and, like, the chronically ill experience. And I feel very much a similar kind of thing, weirdly, where, like, when I first got the fibro diagnosis and even before that, like, when people would be like, well, that seems fake, like, you don't look sick, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you know, I have days sometimes where I can't physically lift a book in front of my face to read. Like, it's that bad. And so when I was still doubting my own diagnosis, because there is such misinformation about fibromyalgia out there and such disbelief about it, I, like, those types of comments would hit me harder because I was doubting it. I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I am just a lazy weirdo. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And then the more that I educated myself on the disease and what actually goes on in the body and brain from the disease, the more and more I'm like, nah, those people are just fucking ignorant. Like, they're just wrong. And they haven't lived in my body. And like, it just washes off me at this point. It just doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it's just there is a level of like, do you want me to explain to you why you're wrong? I have the information for, you're not going to listen to me. Okay, whatever, I don't care. You can just be wrong. There are 7 billion people in the world. Some of them are going to be wrong. That's okay. Yeah. I don't care. I don't need to spend my time on that. And that also, I think, again, comes from a place of abundance in just like, no, I'll find the people that are right about things and socialize with them, and I'll build my circles in that. And there is more time in the world than my tiny brain can fathom. There are more people in the world than I can fathom. I'll figure it out in a different way, which is a really hard thing to do as someone who has struggled with, you know, a lack of material abundance my entire life. Mm-hmm. And social and all of that, like, it's not necessarily an easy thing to cultivate. However, having a home base of like places where you know, like people that you know care about you that you can go to for support, and things that you know you could be good at, or places where you can, that you know you can go and feel fulfilled and feel confident in something. Building up those little cores in yourself first is going to be the first step in like building up a real like sustainable self-confidence.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and I agree with you, even though like I've had many conversations with my therapist and with others over the years about like, mm-hmm. ideally we would all be able to feel inherently worthy of love mm-hmm. and acceptance and inherently valuable as people just because we're people. And like, mm-hmm. I've had times where like I didn't feel like I was very smart or doing very well creatively, and I was doubting myself, and my therapist would be like, you don't need to be perfect in those areas all the time, like it's fine. But I agree mm-hmm. with you that I think it does make a huge difference to feel like you're good at certain things. Like, you don't have to, but like, I think it really does make a big difference, even if they're just like small things that only you care about, like that one iPhone game that you're like really weirdly good at or whatever. Like, things like that really can bolster your confidence in small ways over time. I've found this with like my song a week project. It makes me feel good about myself every single week because I did a thing, I made a thing that I think is good, and it doesn't matter if it never makes me any money. Like, that's not the point. It just makes me trust myself and like myself a little bit more every week. And I think that it's really good to have stuff in your life like that that makes you feel competent and accomplished, even if it seems like really silly stuff to other people.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, because everyone is good at something in some way, right? And finding those areas that you are good at, and also like finding the things that you want to put your skill points into being good at. Because we mm-hmm. can each only specialize in a handful of things that we can like really know about, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least at any given time that we can really dedicate a ton of attention to learning about or whatever. And you don't have to be measuring yourself against, like, social media makes it so easy for us to measure ourselves against everyone on everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, why is that 13-year-old really good at, like, needle pointing? They're better than I'll ever be at needle pointing. I've never needle pointed in my fucking life. I don't need to ever be as good as this 13-year-old or anyone at needle point. I don't need to know that there's someone who's phenomenal at that on the other side of the world in some kind of way making me feel bad about myself. It's fine. I know the things that I am good at, and I can kind of, it also gives me space to marvel at all of the other things that humans are good at without feeling like it is threatening to me, or that like I have to compare myself in any meaningful way. It just gives me space to kind of wonder at all of the other shit that humans can do.
Yeah, and I mean, seeing the variety of stuff online that people can do is also a good reminder that it's not as if there's just good at a thing and bad at a thing. There's a zillion different ways to do everything. Like, someone might be a better singer than me, but not as good at writing a particular type of witty, weird sex song. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like, those are different things. And like, I see the spectrum of human skill and ability very much in terms of a really wide spectrum. Yeah. And not just like, you know, a gradation that's very black and white from good to bad.
Yeah. And I think a lot when I'm thinking about self-confidence, but also in terms of this, of the thing you talk about with your favorite ice cream flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you like me to butcher it or would you like to do your...
Yeah, this was a metaphor I used to use to help myself when I was struggling with feeling unattractive, which was like, mm-hmm. if I look in the mirror and I look at myself and I go, well, I don't like how that looks. I'm not into that. So therefore, no one should be into it. It's sort of like if I was dating someone and they said to me, my favorite ice cream flavor in the whole world is pistachio. I love it so much. If I was like, ew, like, no, you don't. No one likes pistachio. Pistachio is gross. What are you talking about? Like, that's obviously not a good or accurate way to respond because that is their favorite flavor. That is what they're telling you. And right. you can believe them without agreeing with them.
Right. And that can be true of physical attractiveness, but also of every other spectrum of people's personality and experience and just the human experience. Mm-hmm. And the other big thing that has helped with my self-confidence probably over the past decade or so of adulthood I have in my life, God, way more than that. is not just knowing myself, but also finding my people and finding the circles in which the things that I value in myself are also valued and are also appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found self-confidence also, we're getting a little bit into, I wanted to talk about what like building sustainable self-confidence feels like. And I know we've talked a little bit about self-knowledge, but I think one of the other things is living in line with your values, like understanding your values and living in line with them.
Mm-hmm.
Surrounding yourself with people and environments and communities that are going to recognize the traits that you value in yourself, that you have put skill points into, and affirm them back to you and value you for those traits, right? Those traits are going to bring value to that community in meaningful ways, right? Ways that you're able to actually express these things that you feel good about yourself and be seen by other people doing that.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And this is like part of why I've probably been like the most depressed at certain times in my life when I was dating someone or friends with people who just like didn't really care about whatever the things were that I was obsessed with at the time, whether mm-hmm. they be things I was trying to achieve or do myself or just things I was interested in, like musical theater or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. it's really a weird feeling to be so knowledgeable or skilled at something that like nobody in your inner circle like actually gives a shit about or thinks is important. Like, I do get why oftentimes people feel not great about that and they might lean into their online communities or online friendships in that case or whatever. And I do think mm-hmm. that's important. I think you're totally right. Like, you got to be in communities that value what you value about yourself. I, at this point, only really want to date people who value the things that I value about myself because mm-hmm. I feel like otherwise I end up trying to perform to fit someone's idea of who they would ideally want me to be. And like, I'm so mm-hmm. great that anyone who's with me should value me for, you know, what I'm great at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this might be silly, but one of the things that comes to mind for me when I also think of the feeling of self-confidence and you saying like, I'm so great, you should whatever, like, is just the thought that like, I did this on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about that time someone tried to hate crime me. One of the things they said to me often was like, look at you. And I kept being like, I'm looking at me. I did this. I look like this on purpose. I look at me professionally. I take mm-hmm. so many pictures of me. I'm so happy with what I look like, actually. Like, I truly, I understand this is supposed to be threatening or degrading in some kind of way. I know. I did this. I did this on purpose. And that, like, I did this on purpose is also feels like such a core kernel of a lot of self-confidence. And it's like, no, I live this way because I thought about it. And I'm sure, again, and again, it comes to that, like, no, I've checked. And it also comes from a place of like, no, I've lived a version of not this, and I've lived this version, and this is better. It's just better. I know what the other version feels like, which for me is so key to so much self-confidence is like, no, I've done not this and it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So I'm doing this now and it doesn't suck. You see? So I'm going to keep with the this and not that.
Yeah.
And that's what makes boundaries so much easier for me to enforce. That's what makes, like, so much stuff comes from that just body memory of what the other thing felt like.
Yeah, it's so funny when people try to make fun of you for not living up to a standard that you're not fucking trying to live up to. Okay. Like,
yeah.
Remember when that, like, conservative blogger wrote, like, a blog post about me where, like, truly the worst that he could come up with was, like, I self-identify as a slut and I sometimes wear a strap-on. And he was like, no good man would ever want to be partnered with Kate Sloan. It's like, that's demonstrably not true. Like, look at my DMs, bro. Like, right. They're overflowing at all times.
Right. And anyone who agrees with that is not someone who'd be compatible with dating you. So it's like, I don't, you were just,
yeah,
like, and any reader of the thing, you're like, you're just and I mean, that stuff hits so much harder when you don't feel like you have the community around you to prove that that is not true.
Yeah,
like we were talking about earlier. Yeah. And I think just knowing, again, like you said, that is demonstrably not true.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we've talked a lot about, like, the experience of kind of developing self-confidence and what that has felt like for us and what it's felt like over the course of our lives. But I guess, I mean, we said off the top, it's pretty indisputably hot. But can you talk to me a little bit about why, or can you kind of break that down?
Yeah, I think that the most basic and probably most cited reason confidence is hot,
mm-hmm,
is that when someone performs themselves as being high value, you're more likely to view them as high value, mm-hmm, and assume that they are.
Mm-hmm.
This is just simply true. Like, it's just like, I find it so interesting to look at, like, celebrities and public figures who are not what one would call conventionally attractive, but who are total, mm-hmm, heartthrobs with immense sex appeal, and go, what, mm-hmm, are they doing that makes that the case? And it so often just has so much to do with confidence and how they carry themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is the thing I mentioned earlier about how, like, I personally, and I think a lot of people probably feel this way too, feel that if someone is being really insecure and self-deprecating and self-effacing in conversation with me, it's quite emotionally laborious to be with somebody who is being, mm-hmm, that way. If you've just met them in particular, like, if, mm-hmm, we've been dating for a while, obviously it's fine to, like, discuss your insecurities with me and I'll be there for you and support you emotionally through that. But the, mm-hmm, thing is, if you've just met someone, this is most, if not all, of what you know about them. And so, mm-hmm, it's just not always, I don't know, it doesn't project a good image of you, and it also doesn't reflect well on, like, your social intelligence, because, mm-hmm, it makes it feel like you're looking to people you just met for reassurance, even if that's not what you're trying to do. It can come across, mm-hmm, that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another thing is, like, someone who's really confident seems like they know what they want. And, mm-hmm, so when they start talking to you, flirting with you, trying to get with you, you're like, oh, you really know what you want and you really want me specifically. Like, that's a very, mm-hmm, intoxicating feeling, as opposed to when I used to go to the sex clubs and some, like, nervous dude would come up to me and be like, do you want to go to the third floor and hook up? And I would be like, I don't know, like, not really. Like, I just met you, like, literally 0.2 seconds ago. Mm-hmm. And he would be like, okay. And then turn to the person next to me and be like, you want to go to the third floor and hook up? And it's like, the lack of confidence in that approach and in the specificities of his desire were just so off-putting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, those are the main things. I also think, like, you know, if someone is more confident, probably they, if someone is feeling more confident internally, they're probably going to be in a better position to, like, say smart, witty things, make me laugh, have interesting conversation with me. People, mm-hmm, who are really, really nervous oftentimes struggle to do this. I think I've observed this a lot of times about, like, men on first dates not asking me any questions. I think in many cases it's because they're really nervous and their brains won't slow down enough to, like, think of a goddamn question. Mm-hmm. And I sympathize and I empathize, but at the same time, like, I don't want to be running the whole conversation because you're nervous. Like, I'm also, yeah, nervous. That makes me immensely nervous to have to do that. And so I would love if we could spread out the burden a little bit on that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think the emotional labor of directing a conversation to not just the reassurance that can go into someone who is being maybe particularly self-deprecating during a conversation and displaying, like, low self-confidence in that way, but also just the low self-confidence can often look like an unwillingness to make a certain decision about anything, or, mm-hmm, you know, we often want to create space for people to feel safe and comfortable in our conversations. Absolutely. And there is a difference between saying, would you like to do this thing or not? And displaying that, like, I'm totally going to be comfortable if you say no to me in this space and we can talk about something else or whatever. Versus, would you like to do this thing or this thing or this thing? Really, I'm down for anything as long as you're doing it with me. Would you, me and you, though, anything? That, like, what do you want to, right? Mm-hmm. That is more like, what question can I ask you to get a yes from you?
Yeah.
As opposed to, here are the things that are on the table that are fun for me, and a no is also totally fine for me, and it will not reflect on my self-image for you to deny me in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
So I think you're right in that it can be really attractive to meet someone who, I know when I meet people and it feels like they are not expressing strong preferences around anything, for me what that feels like is that there are some boundaries, or there must be some boundaries that they're not aware of or that they're not expressing, either yeah. like consciously or unconsciously. They are letting me just do it, and that is a thing that I will start constantly questioning, and that will make me more anxious, and that will put a lot more emotional labor on me. Yeah. Not just accounting for that, but also, well, now we're not doing like 50-50 on any of these decisions. Now we're not like, all right, well, I could go for, you know, Mexican or Chinese, or, you know, what do you, oh, you want tacos? Okay, great. Let's go get tacos. You know, like mm-hmm. we're not half and halving any of this. And it is exhausting to make all of the decisions. And frankly, even people who may appear very self-confident to you may also be questioning if all of the, like, start questioning those decisions if they feel like they are the one making all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think in talking about decision making and this kind of certainty and directness, we are, a lot of the traits we've been talking about are things that are going to signal dominance in a lot of people. And I thought I wanted to take a minute to talk a little bit about what self-confidence looks like in submissives, and how that can still be hot and how you can still signal submissiveness and confidence.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing about being a confident submissive is that there are probably always going to be people who are going to mistakenly assume you're a dom or a top mm-hmm. just because of stereotypes and perceptions. Mm-hmm. I've had that problem my whole life in the kink community, I would say. Uh-huh. And it's understandable. In some ways, I find it a flattering assumption. I'm like, haha, so funny that you think that I would be capable of being a full-time dom and top. Very hilarious to me. But I think, like, one of the things that I've been complimented on the most by doms and tops as a sub is my clarity of desires, which you were just talking mm-hmm. about a minute or two ago, about I have a really strong sense of what I want and what I like. And that doesn't mean that I'm there topping from the bottom being like, I want you to hit me 30 times at this intensity and then move up to this intensity for 20 hits and whatever. Like, I'm not calling the shots to that degree, but I have, you know, a list of things that I really enjoy and a list of things that I sometimes enjoy. And my limits are very known to me as well. And I'm good at explaining that. And I think that in some ways, doms and tops find that a satisfying proposition because they're like, oh, I know what the rubric is. Like, I know what to hit to make it really good. I didn't mean it in a spanking way in using the word hit there, but that's also literally true. And I know, like, what I should avoid. I also think that if you seem confident and decisive and strong in your everyday life, there's probably something extra satisfying and exciting about a dom being able to turn you into something much more vulnerable and broken down and subby or spacey or whatever it may be. Like, there's just going to be a bigger contrast there. And there's also the thing about how, like, if you won't or can't say no, nobody can really trust your yes. Like, if you're a people right. pleaser who's constantly like, yeah, I guess I could do that. Like, if you want me to do that, I could do that. Then it's just not as satisfying because your top is never going to know, like, what really would do it for you. And they're never going to be able to completely trust that you're telling the truth about things. Mm-hmm. And so even though there's definitely parts of me who believe that it would make me a better sub in some ways to be more accommodating and more of a shrinking flower and be like, do whatever you want to me, which is hot in fantasy, I think it's just more practical for both people if both the dom and the sub ideally have a pretty strong idea of what they tend to like, and then they can have a discussion from that place of like, okay, where does that overlap? where would those be good together? I think for me, in terms of like how to project confidence as a submissive, like maybe I'll link in the show notes to this blog post I wrote that was about like submissive flirting techniques. But like one thing I'll often do is just like talk about my kinks when they come up in conversation and make little comments. Mm-hmm. Like, I bet you would be really good at hitting me, actually. You look like you have a... I don't know. You look like you have a strong hit or whatever. And I might like allude to past experiences just to sort of like get them thinking in that direction and denote some of my experience and my interests. And then I'll also be pretty proactive about giving sometimes a really explicit green light. Like I will sometimes say to a dom, like, I think we should go make out. Mm-hmm. Or I think you should hit me tonight. How do you feel about that? And yeah, there are some doms who might not like that for various reasons, but I don't think that those doms are terribly compatible with me.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you were talking about there being folks who will always like misread self-confidence as toppiness, I do think that's true. I think there will also always be horny submissives who see toppiness wherever they want to see toppiness.
Yeah, been there. That was a big problem for me for a while.
Yeah, I again, been there.
Yeah.
Also met that dude on FetLife. Like, come on now. They will just, like, there are dudes in the DMs of the subbiest people I know on FetLife being like, so, hello, mistress. Like, yeah. Shut the fuck up.
They're always asking me to peg them. I'm like, you have no idea how picky I am about that. You have no idea. Like,
truly. So, all of that is to say, I don't think it's worth really, you know, addressing them. Also, honestly, I think most of the really experienced tops I know are going to specifically be looking for self-confidence in their submissives and are going to see a lack of it as at least an orange flag. Maybe the inverse. Dominants who see a lack of self-confidence in their submissives as hot or an appealing trait have a fucking burnt orange, probably red flag, in my book, because that, to my mind, that is not someone who is looking to meet as equals and plan out a power dynamic. That is someone who wants to feel powerful in, you know, any number of other ways.
It's fine if you fetishize the breaking down of that strength in various ways. Like, it can definitely be hot to see the vulnerable side of someone who is otherwise strong. But I agree with you that if you're like wanting a person who is in general not very good at asserting themselves, that's not a great sign. Like, why do you want that?
Right. Like, this is not to say that people who are anxious can't be loved and adored and people can't be attracted to them in a million other ways. But if that is like towards the top of the list of your traits, buddy, I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reason I say that is because I think many of our listeners would agree. And I think many of our submissive listeners should keep that in mind when, you know, thinking about how to behave in the world, or if they are at all feeling nervous about feeling too overconfident, right? Mm-hmm. I think self-assuredness, knowing yourself, knowing your kinks, all of that is going to give dominance more space to play with you with everything you just said. Mm-hmm. And everything we talked about kind of on the macro level can be brought in specifically when we're thinking about sex and kink stuff, is that confidence comes from knowing the things that you have done, knowing the things that you enjoy, knowing the things that you can do, that, and being able to speak confidently about, like, I've done that, I feel this way about this, speaking with nuance about how you may react to different things, and feeling like you are speaking from a place of understanding. So much of my self-confidence comes from like, no, I've thought about this for a long time. Like, I've looked at it from so many angles. I promise you, like, I don't know everything about it, but I know a lot about this thing. And considering many of these things I'm talking about are me focused, I'm kind of the expert on it. Mm-hmm. Right. And knowing that I put the time into thinking about it, knowing that I've tried things, and knowing the things that I can very comfortably be like, oh, no fucking idea, but let's find out together.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I find that really attractive in a dom, too, where, yes, it's really good for doms to be confident about the things that they are good at and interested in, because it helps the sub relax and feel comfortable. But also, I don't want a dom to overproject confidence about something they don't know a lot about. Like, if I ask about doing fire play and you've never fucking done that, don't be like, I'm sure I could pick that up. Like, maybe you could, but, like, let's talk about how you're going to do that and like what resources might help you do that. And like, you don't need to act as if you're going to instantly pick it up, because I wouldn't trust you in that case. Because what if you don't?
Right. And here's the thing, like, and that does kind of bring us back around to the fake it till you make it thing, because that can backfire, right? There is a point where we can tell if you are like faking knowledge about things that you don't know, faking experience in places and skills that you like. People are going to pick up on that or pick up on that eventually, and that is not going to read as confidence.
Yeah.
However, pretending that you're fine with the fact that you know nothing about this, even though it seems terrifying to you, is the kind of fake it till you make it that's going to make sense, right? That is going to work, right? Being like, no, I got no idea, but I'm sure talk to me about what you find fascinating about it. Do you know anyone that you recommend I could get books for, right? Even if in the back of your head you're like, Jesus fucking Christ, how do I learn to set someone on fire? What the fuck are you talking? Fire? I've never even heard of fire play. What do you mean? Yeah. But if you're just there like, sure, no, I know I could figure it out. I know I can talk to you about, like, tell me what you find hot. Tell me more about while I kind of ground myself in this idea and what version of this could I do, does feel accessible, does feel doable, and can I kind of integrate with my knowledge of myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the question that we always ask people to ask each other, which is like, why are you into that? I think is a really useful question when you have an immediate gut reaction to someone asking about a particular kink like that. Because I think it's ultimately a much more useful response than being like, oh my God, that sounds wild. Or being like, yeah, I could totally do that. Like, maybe you could, but it would be more useful to learn about why do they want you to do that? And like, what's hot about it? And like, what parts of it do they actually want to try?
Yeah. And that comes back to what you were saying about questions. And they can also function as like a great buffer for you to kind of muster up that confidence in a moment where you're like, ah, the conversation has gone into an area where I know absolutely nothing. I am completely out of my depths, which for me is a place where I find my confidence floundering really quickly. I like to be the cleverest boy. I like to know the things. Why are we in new territory?
Yeah.
But a question can toss the ball back over to the other person, get them talking for a second, give you a second to kind of gather your thoughts and come with more, you know, curiosity or empathy or whatever, and confidence in, I'm learning now, this is not a place where I have to know everything, and that's okay.
Yep, totally. All right, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks on self-confidence. Hope you're feeling good about yourself today, or that you will tomorrow, if not today. It's a good feeling. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find me online at katesloan.com, which is also my Blue Sky username. I'm doing Song a Week this year. As I mentioned, all my music is on YouTube and Bandcamp. The most recent song that I released was called Trust You, and it's just such a gay romantic song about how it feels good to trust someone. I write a weekly newsletter at katesloan.email. The most recent one of those was about, can you learn how to fuck someone well at a distance? And I was writing about using a long-distance love and sex toy with a new person I'm seeing and whether they can get a good sense of how to fuck me IRL from doing that. You can find all those newsletters at katesloan.email for $5 a month, which gets you access to that essay plus the hundreds of past paywalled essays. My two books are 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do and 200 Words to Help You Talk About Sexuality and Gender. Where is your stuff?
I'm Billy Lore. You can find all the things I do over at billylore.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at billylore and all the other places on the internet. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. But most importantly, you go to patreon.com/thedildorks, toss a couple of bucks our way, help us keep doing this thing that we do. For $6 a month, you get access to our exclusive Discord, and at $12 a month, you get our Patreon-only bonus episodes.
Thank you so much to our top-tier Patreon supporters, Robin, Amy, Todd, Natalie, MB, our most hated patron, Jay, Twitch 101, and Sweet Jimmy of the Valley. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Addison Finch, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Okay.
Did you have a question on there about like why confidence is good for DOMs / why it's good for subs or anything like that? Because I have some thoughts on that, but.
I had what does self-confidence look like as a submissive and is it still hot? Because I think we're going to talk a lot about traits that seem dominant.
Yeah. Cool. Great. I figured you would have a question about that, but I just wanted to check.
I am excited for that one. No, thank you. Yeah. I sound awful. It's because I have a cold. Okay. I don't know how I'm going to set up this topic. I think I'm just going to say things. That's fine. Yeah. I'm also at the end of a work day and transitioning into being this human. I know how to do this. All right.
Yep. You do.
Can't argue with it. What's the word that I'm trying to use?
Inarguable.
Thank you.
Uncontroversial.
Thank you. No, inarguable is the one. But I'm supposed to distill that into one question, not just give you the whole episode at the top. Hang on. Okay. If you don't get, this is not even for the podcast, but if you don't get this reference, this is just a bloop for you to play for your wife because it's a sleep no more joke.
Okay.
Did you ever see Lady M behind the one-way mirror?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. It's one of the performances in the room with the bathtub. There's the one-way mirror, and she does this solo performance behind it where she is looking in the mirror and also just thrashing about in her very Madness of Lady M moment. Anyway, that's what my cat's doing in her box over there.
The M stands for meow. I went and saw Macbeth recently. Okay. Did I tell you that?
Oh,
I went and saw a Macbeth that was like 90s biker gangs. To.
Oh my God. No, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was like set in like a motel, like a sleazy motel where the different factions are like different gangs.
Holy shit. I'm obsessed.
It was really cool. It was a lot of leather jackets. There was actual motorcycles on stage. It was pretty sick.
They made it for me. Okay, no, it's fine. That's...
yeah, I wish that you were there with us.
I know.
It was great.
Okay. Back to the actual topic at hand. Yeah. It's fine. We'll be right back.